From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's been a while, but Denise Brown is here, and denisebrown.com is the website. Go to the show notes, click on the link. She has a book, If Our Kitchen Table Could Talk, From One Friend to Another, Domestic Violence. We started talking more about it last week, and we're going to continue talking about it. It's a scourge. It's a huge problem, obviously, across North America, around the world. We don't know, as far as the local governments and the state governments and the federal governments, what they're doing. It's election time right now. It's time to push the politicians a little bit because we need more done. Hi, Denise. Welcome back to the show.
No, thanks. Good to be here.
Now,
how are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. It's been a while, but it's always an important topic to talk about. But before we get into it, and I want to talk about the book a little bit. You're doing your own radio show now. That's different since I had you on last time. Tell us about it.
Oh my God, I'm always trying to figure out new ways, creative ways to get the word out there. And I started the radio show, and I do it as a co-host. I'm a co-host with another woman, Danielle Pierre, who's a motivational life coach, very zen type of woman. And it's working great. And, it's picking up some listeners, and we're getting the word out there, and we talk mostly about it's domestic violence, sexual assault, teen violence, child abuse, mental health. I mean, there's like a whole array of things that we like to discuss and talk about, animal abuse as well. So, that keeps me really busy, which is great,
And
I love doing that.
How do the folks get to listen to the show?
Well, they can go to detoxradio.com, and that's detoxradio.com, because Denise and Danielle, right? So they can listen to that. We've got archived shows. We're doing, actually tonight, starting actually right now, there is a radio show that we have taped because it's for May 17th for actually Thursday, but we're airing it today. Pre-tape that one, and it's for Cyber Awareness Day, which is on May 17th. So that's a very cool show, and that's going to be archived as well. So, your listeners can go there as well to detoxradio.com to listen to that. But we have a good time. I mean, that's like a really great show because people can get their causes out to the masses.
Yeah.
We publicize it. We send out promo pieces. We, it's pretty much word of mouth, Facebook, Twitter, the whole thing. But it's fun, and we're getting, everybody's information out there, and people have us, and we like to let people know about those causes.
Well, it's so important, and the big word abuse, no matter what it is, domestic, verbal violence, you went through them all. Education is so important, and how we educate the folks, whether it's the woman who can't escape the cycle of violence, and we can talk about that in a minute, to the policeman on the street that's maybe stuck in the 1950s and not sure how to investigate it, to the ER nurse, to the counselor, to the husband that may be
covers
listening.
Everything.
And that's so important. And mm-hmm. What do we do? And I talked about governments a little bit when in the intro, Denise, what do we do to get the governments going? Because, gull darn it, they're just not doing enough, in my opinion.
Well, what I've noticed is there's been a huge push with change.org. Do you guys know that?
Yep.
Do you know change.org?
I
yeah.
Sure do.
I mean, there's been a huge push with petitions and people, the causes, whatever your cause is, and getting their legislators involved in certain causes, be it domestic violence, be it sexual assault, changing laws, trying to push things through that way. So a lot of people are doing that. And then also, I always say, give them a call.
Yeah.
Call them, hound them, let them know the importance for yourself, for your family, that, hey, you don't want domestic violence in your neighborhood. You don't want to see your child going out and playing where it used to be safe and nice, being abducted. You get to let these guys know that this is something that's really important to you. Because if you don't, they're going to be voting on streets or borders or God knows what they're going to be voting on. You know, and they're not going to take it serious. So if we, the people, need to really step up to the plate and start pounding down their telephones, pounding down their doors, you know, all that.
Giving voice to those that can't be heard or haven't been heard the right way is so important. A topic and a term that I use, and I know you've talked about it too, is the re-victimization of victims, being afraid to come forward because they don't want to go through it again. They don't want to testify. The prosecutor that is maybe a little weak, the defense attorney that tries to blame the victim, all that sort of stuff, the court process. Let's talk about that a little bit. We need to do more to stop re-victimization.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, and that's everywhere. I have more people calling me and going, oh my God, I thought because I spoke up, everything was going to be okay, and I let people know. But my God, they are on me like 100% of the time that it's my fault, my fault, my fault. And they're being very victimized all over again for doing the right thing. And that's the sad part, is that, you know, that's where education is so important, I believe. People need to be educated. The courts need to be educated. Prosecutors need to be educated. I think, you know, when we had a trial, and this was, gosh, 18 years ago when we had the criminal trial and civil trial and all that stuff that was going on with us, but I'll tell you, if we would have known what we are allowed to do and able to do in courts, I think, I'm not saying that there would be a different outcome, but I truly believe that people would have known more about this from us personally, because, I mean, it was like we felt like we couldn't do anything. And now, thank God, people are speaking up more and more. But then, you know, they're coming out of the relationship being abused again. So, you know, it's a matter of speaking out. It's a matter of educating people. Everybody's human. Everybody makes mistakes. Yeah. But gosh darn it, I cannot stomach the fact that when you go into a courtroom, the defense attorneys try to get somebody that is knowingly either a murderer or an abuser or a sexual offender or a pedophile or God knows what, and they try to help them get off, and they seem to have more rights than the actual victim.
Yep.
And that infuriates me like you have no idea.
Oh, I know.
Oh, it just drives me absolutely crazy.
I believe it. I believe it. Denise Brown's here. Check out her webpage, denisebrown.com. And you brought up something I was going to ask you in a minute or two. All the high-profile cases, you talk about them, I talk about them, we see them in the news every day, turn on the crime shows that are on TV. The next big case is coming up, Drew Peterson in Illinois. Cameras in the courtroom. You lived it 18 years ago. Your thoughts on cameras in the courtroom 18 years later.
It's really interesting because I like cameras in the courtroom.
Yeah.
I truly believe there are certain situations. Now, in our case, he was a very loved, wonderful, you know, rah-rah, everybody loves him, you know, guy. And I believe that if we would not have cameras in the courtroom, nobody would have believed that he could have done something so horrific or even beat my sister. So I like it in case. I think it just varies case by case because, I mean, sometimes I feel like, okay, well, maybe it can do more harm than good. I don't know. I think the media now plays too much on these things and that everybody's got, there's no, you know, everybody's so opinionated and everybody has their 2 cents to put in. So I'm not sure if it's such a good idea anymore.
Yeah.
That was all brand new then, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because you're right, the talking head, so to speak, the judge or the prosecutor or the defense attorney that gets starstruck because of the cameras, that play to the cameras. We saw it with Jose Baez in the Casey Anthony case in Florida, and God knows what's going to happen in Illinois with Peterson, but you're right. There are pros and cons. I love the title of the book, If Our Kitchen Table Could Talk. How prophetic is that? From one friend to another. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, when we were growing up, everything happened around our kitchen table.
Yep.
And, you know, we had laughs. I mean, we would laugh around our kitchen table. And, you know, it was just, I just thought it was so perfect for what the book is. I mean, it's a small little book, and it has, like, you know, a little story about our family in the beginning, and then it has cycle of domestic violence, and then it has some quotes from, you know, Oprah, from Gandhi, from, you know, books to read and things like that. And it's just got a little bit of everything, and also a small bit of yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, to help yourself. And, you know, I mean, I did that with a friend of mine, Shakti Chen, and the two of us did it because, you know, we felt it was important, another way to get the word out there. People, I don't know, I just figure there's got to be, like, so many different ways of getting our word out there and educating people. I'm not tech savvy at all, so I wish I was more tech savvy, and I wish I knew all the little ways to get out there to the masses and to really do, like, a very, you know, hard push, anti-domestic violence, anti-violence in general. I wish I knew how to do that. I'm not that savvy. I've got lots of ideas, but I just don't know how to implement them.
You know, and Denise Brown is here. When you talk about that and tech savvy, compare again 18 years ago to today with the social media, the Twitters and the Facebooks and everything that's done on the internet and the way to get the word out. A term I like to use, Denise, is what we do here is main street media rather than 5-minute sound bites on mainstream media because they just don't do it. You know, we see Nancy Grace and the others that try their best, but to cover one story 315 times in a row, you know that there's those 315 other people that would just love to have 5 minutes of time. Does the media do enough? I'm pretty sure I know your answer as far as, you know, championing our cause.
No. No, they don't. And, you know, I mean, there's some people that I do know and I always try to send them press releases or I send them text messages, go, hey, I think it's time to do something again, proactive. I'm involved with an organization called In Search of Me Cafe, which is all about helping teens. It's such an awesome program that is actually through the internet and on the web. It's insearchofmecafe.com, and it's peer-to-peer. It's very progressive as far as, you know, getting out there and talking about teen issues, teen causes, whatever teens want to talk about. And they've done surveys and studies on why they picked the certain topics that they did, and one of the biggest ones was bullying,
right,
which is huge, I mean, everywhere. And so they have these teens talking about bullying, and they have their curriculum actually in a school in Hong Kong right now. They're implementing on the East Coast into the Boys and Girls Clubs, and I just got an email from them on how they had 5 kids in one of the Boys and Girls Clubs in Florida, and now, because, you know, kids just don't want to go there, teens. They've got other things to do, and now they have 19 kids that attend because they love this program so much and it's helping them so much. So, you know, there's great things. They utilize the media to do that, which I think is incredible. You know, all I do is put it down on Twitter and on Facebook. You know, I mean, that's as far as I can go with it. But it's such a wonderful program. That is something that, you know, should be in every Boys and Girls Club, every after-school program, keeping the kids out of trouble. When they're 16 years old, they want to get in their car and they want to drive and they want to go someplace and they don't want to tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
But this program seems to be keeping these kids off the streets in these Boys and Girls Clubs and really doing something that they're very proud of, something that they can wrap their arms around and wrap their heads around. And it's taking a life of its own, really. I mean, it's really going gangbusters.
I was listening to and I won't even mention his name because it's not worth it, quote-unquote high-profile radio host about a month ago talking about bullying, and I couldn't believe it, brought up the term, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And try to say that if we stuck to that prophecy, if you could use that term for it, and I wanted to reach through that radio and just pinch his nose and say, think about this a little bit, my friend, because whether you're being bullied by your husband or whether you're being bullied on the playground, names can hurt you, and that's how it starts. Let's talk about that a little bit and the old-time thinking versus what we're trying to get across now, the new thinking.
Well, the old-time thinking was, just like you said, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me, and which is so, so far from the truth because, you know, the cyberbullying, the texting, the calling people's names, it's, you know, I was just looking at something online, and it was interesting because a rumor that somebody, because she didn't like another girl or something, she put something out there, and people started, I mean, it just went viral. And like the 14-year-old boy, Jamie Rottemeyer in New York, he killed himself because people were bullying him and calling him names, and, he, you know, it just, and these things, these gossips, the gossip and the verbal and the words and the name-calling and stuff, I mean, it's horrible. It's one of the worst things that kids can do to another child. And what people need to do, to realize, men and women, boys and girls, is that name-calling is very hurtful, and it can lead to death, and it can lead to, you know, your child committing suicide, and people need to understand the severity of it and really take it one step further. And actually, if you know if it's happening to your child, take it a step further. Go talk to the school. Go talk to somebody about it and what you can do to be proactive so that your child doesn't end up hanging themselves in their own closet or something, you know?
Exactly.
It's very, very serious.
What about the signs? You know, we look at maybe the school marks go down or they lock themselves in their room or, you know, things like that. What about the signs for the parent with that 16-year-old that may be worried that something is happening but they're not sure how to approach it?
Well, the most obvious one really is, Mom, you know, I really don't feel good today. I don't want to go to school.
Yeah.
And you don't, they don't have a temperature. They don't, you know, maybe they don't, they just don't want to go there because they cannot put up with that. They stop eating. You know, I mean, there's just so many signs of that is, you know, out there right now. That these kids are just, they don't know what to do. You know? And the main thing is, I believe, is they don't want to go to school.
Yeah.
They just want to stay home.
How do you get it across to the educator that there's a problem? You walk into the teacher's office or the principal's office or whatever, and they shrug it off. Ah, that's just kids being kids. You know, the first thought that comes to mind is, no, it's not kids being kids. There's a problem. But what are your suggestions?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't hear that too much anymore. What I hear more now is not that kids will be kids, but that we don't have the funding to do anything about it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing more and more. And so that's why we're doing this big push with In Search of Me Cafe, so that, you know, it costs $7,000 to get this program into a Boys and Girls Club or into an after-school program. That's give or take some, you know, depending on what you want to do. But that's like a whole marketing campaign. That's like everything that they could possibly do that you could even imagine them doing, what that costs. And I think it's worth the $7,000 to not have, you know, a death on your hands. You know, they always cry money. And that is something that I don't understand because, as far as I'm concerned, my son's life is priceless.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if somebody, if a school has got thousands of children, get $50 from each family. You can start one of these school after school programs to educate these children, and you know, it's a peer to peer. They are talking to kids in Belgium and Hong Kong and, you know, all over the world. And they will realize that, hey, you know what? We've got the same problem you do, so now let's try to figure out what we can do. Yes, there's a monitor. Yes, there's a, you know, the team director that's monitoring the whole class. But I'll tell you, it is so so worth the $7,000, $8,000 that, you know, to save your children's lives.
Yeah, for sure. Denise Brown is here for about another 5 minutes. Denise, I'm always amazed. All the victims that I've spoken to, victims' families, yourself, the courage. We've talked about A, abuse. Now we're going to talk about C, courage. I'm amazed how people like yourself, Joe and Mary Sixpack, I like to call them, that can come back from losing a loved one, going through their system that we have, even though it's the only system we have, and maybe being disappointed or seeing someone being set free, to turn that around and try and help others. Let's spend the last couple of minutes on how do you use that strength yourself, Beth Holloway. I can talk name after name after name that I've interviewed, and how do you do that? How do you get that courage every day?
Well, I think it's probably from the emails I get, the phone calls I get, knowing the horrific things that are still going on out there. I would have thought 18 years ago when my sister was murdered, and there was such a huge worldwide, knowledge about this, that I would have thought that domestic violence was going to end. And I didn't think that, I didn't know anything about it at the time. So I didn't know how deep-rooted the situation and really is. But now knowing about it and knowing that there's so much information out there and there's so many people talking about it, that I don't understand how somebody can still get into that situation. You know what I mean? But yeah. It happens all the time. It happens on a daily basis. So I know that my work is never done. I know that I still have to get out there and I have to speak and I have to let people know that, hey, this is happening. This is still happening. You know, just a couple of years ago, it happened to Rihanna and Chris Brown.
Sure, yeah.
So there you have it. But everybody was falling asleep until that happened. Well, you can't fall asleep, people, because people are losing their lives. Kids are losing their lives. You know, I mean, more teenagers are in prison trying to help their parent, one of their parents, and they're in prison for killing the other parent.
Yeah.
You know, or the step-parent, or a boyfriend, or, you know, I mean, it's just, it's horrific what goes on out there. And so, you know, my strength is I keep going because I don't want to see another person murdered, and I don't want to see another person's, life in chaos and in so much pain like ours was. I just don't wish that upon anybody.
Denise Brown, her book, If Our Kitchen Table Could Talk, From One Friend to Another, webpage, denisebrown.com. Listen to her radio show. Listen to her words. She's a fighter, and God bless you, and I wish there were more like you out there, and we'll talk soon, Denise.
Oh, thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
18 years ago. We all know the OJ story. And Denise knows it for sure. She lived it. Her sister, Nicole, was murdered. Ron Goldman, the Goldman family, covered that story many, many times. I've interviewed Denise many times and thought I'd bring her back on the show because she's a hard worker. We talk about domestic violence as much as we can on the program, and abuse, general abuse, whether it's bullying in the schools, in the house, parents on kids, kids on parents, you name it. More needs to be done. The state governments, the local governments, or in Canada, the local governments, provincial governments, federal governments, they need to get off their fannies. The streets are important, and the hockey rink over there, that's important too. Yeah, I get that. But there's also people dying. And the accountability in our countries is something that you got to scratch your head about. So when you look at Denise Brown, and you even go back 18 years and you go back to all the stories that we've done here over the years and you still see them happening, thank heavens there are people like Denise and others that are out there that are fighting the good fight. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with my Fox LA legal correspondent, Robin Sachs. She's an attorney. She used to be a DA, and we're going to talk to Robin about what's been going on here lately. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. It's been a couple of weeks. or longer since we've had Robin on. MyFox LA legal analyst, attorney, former prosecutor, author, violence expert, victims advocate. What else can we say? J.C. Penney spokesman now, or what?
Internal netball. keep going.
Yeah, you're
terrible chef.
You are one of the busiest people that I know. You've always got something going on. And go to robinsax.com to learn more about her. What's been happening with MyFox LA?
Well, in MyFox LA, we are covering all of the very, very important cases that affect the criminal justice system, like the Isabel Solis case, and also the ones that are less maybe important in terms of the grand scheme of things, but nonetheless have viewers interested, for example, the John Travolta case. And I personally have been covering the John Edwards case because as salacious as it is, I find it unbelievably fascinating.
Edwards, going back to the National Enquirer, picking up the story initially, there's a Looney Tune, if there ever was one, in my opinion, John Edwards. The wife, Elizabeth, the breast cancer, the whole thing, the a mistress. People will look at this story and say, you know, it's just another creepy, goofy politician that, you know, like Blagojevich got his hand in the cookie jar, but there's much more to that.
I mean, this case, listen, if John Edwards was being charged with felony jerk or felony cheater or felony salacious details or felony baby out of wedlock or felony anything other than what he's being charged with, I would convict him and suggest everybody convict him in a hot minute.
Right.
But this case, from the prosecution point of view, I think is rather flimsy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this, you know, to say, and you know, that the money that he received from Benny Melton, you know, the 100-year-old or so heiress who donated money, was supposed to be used for campaign finance purposes is something that I haven't seen the prosecution be able to prove. They have proved that he's tried to cover up the affair. They've proved that he's been using money, you know, he took money for them. But, you know, if the argument from the prosecution is, well, he was trying to cover up the affair in order to better his reputation, in order to be elected, that additional step is not the spirit in which the campaign finance law was made. The campaign finance law really kind of comes about in terms of, you know, businesses getting some extra advantage or individuals getting some extra advantage in the lobbying kind of world. And this is all new territory, and I think so new that prosecutors were not only fearful in their case going forward in that they were offering him, you know, less than a 3-month sentence when he's facing 30 years, but, you know, really desperate in putting, you know, Andrew Young on as their star witness, and it didn't really get much better from there.
Well, no one can debate the fact that as intelligent as John Edwards portrays to be, he was thinking with the wrong head. There's no doubt about it. But the goofy mistress on the prosecution witness list, never called her, but will we see her as a defense witness?
Well, I don't think no good can come from Al Hunter's mouth from anybody. She is a wild card, and she really has nothing to benefit. We know no one has anything to benefit with her. I mean, she has so many potential issues for both sides of the fence. I don't think we're going to see her. We've heard plenty about her. I mean, listen, if you want to close this off with a great close, certainly put her on. But I think that I just don't see the benefit to having her come on stand from the defense perspective. What is she going to say? And besides, if she says anything helpful to John Edwards, she's, you know, incredibly impeachable by the prosecution. And if she's saying it, I'm wondering if she's still on this bankroll being paid for her testimony now.
What about the public's perception of politicians? It's been a while. Edwards hasn't been involved in politics that much, but right to the fact of wanting to be president, vice president, Supreme Court justice, you know, he's a bit of a loose screw, that's for sure. But is this turning people off politics?
Well, you know, listen, as I said, I hate to defend the guy, okay? I think he's a jerk, and I would never have wanted him to be my president for a lot of reasons beyond this. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, when it comes to politics, I mean, listen, how he dealt with the situation, and I think the most heinous detail was just the fact that he lied, and he had a dying wife that he was still lying in front of. And then when you hear the testimony about how she came to, you know, how Elizabeth heard the news and was ripping at her clothes off. I mean, it's just awful, awful stuff. But is that going to change anyone's view of politicians? Like, all of a sudden now, because of John Edwards, we think poorly of them? I don't think so.
No. No, you're right. Robin Sachs is here, my Fox LA legal analyst and attorney. Let's talk about John Travolta. We heard a little bit about it if you get onto the TMZ sites and others. Of course, you're covering it, but the goofy politics is taking it over. But it's a important case as far as the celebrity aspect. And is it an extortion? Is it true? Is it what? Let's talk about John Travolta.
Well, listen, I'll tell you, when I was looking at this case just a couple days ago, I had to make a little flow chart as to, you know, who everybody was. You know, you've got four accusers, one lawyer for two people who's then dismissed the client when actually today the newest development is John Doe, number one, the first one to come forward. He has actually withdrawn his case against John Travolta. And then you have John Doe's three and four who are alledgers, but not suit filers yet. And then you have the whole world of other potential victims out there. And I think that, you know, it's really important for all sides of the puzzle to not draw any sort of conclusions. And I certainly don't want to make the argument that where there's smoke, there's fire. But I got to tell you, from a prosecution perspective, when you have four people who independently can corroborate very specific details, and I'm talking about anatomical shapes of body parts and, you know, the consistency of pubic hair and things of that nature, in a complaint with report after report of the same type of behavior that's very specific to certain scenarios, it just doesn't feel like a coinkydink. Let me just go on also from there. I personally, like, the big issue, though, is has he engaged in behavior that's, you know, assaultive? That's really the question. I personally do not care one hoot if the guy is gay or not gay, and what he chooses to do in his personal life is whatever he chooses to do. And if he wants to, you know, deny that aspect, you no longer have that freedom if you're doing and participating in assaultive behavior.
Robin Sachs is here. We're talking about a little bit of everything right now. John Travolta. When you talk about that, it makes you think, although different circumstances, back to the initial Michael Jackson case and the description of his genitalia and all that sort of stuff. But we both know that regardless of all of this, when it gets into the courtroom, it's a crapshoot. Or am I wrong?
It is a crapshoot, but you know, someone's got to, in order to deal with the bully, you got to face a bully, especially in a situation like this. And I think that a lot of people get bullied by celebrities. I think that now, yeah. Let me say it, I think celebrities are the targets of extortion often, and I think that behavior is as atrocious as the assault of behavior because it ruins the credibility and integrity of crime victims everywhere. I mean, that kind of persona and that image carries on. And kudos to John Doe, number two. And I think that, you know, Marty Singer, who's John Travolta's lawyer right now, is, you know, high-fiving himself and saying, you know, this is the beginning of vindication. John Doe, number one, has dismissed the lawsuit. Yes, that is good. If John Doe didn't feel like they had a lawsuit that was a viable lawsuit, I'm thrilled that they dismissed it. But my feeling is that John Doe, number one, is doing John Doe 2, 3, 4, and all the other John Does to follow a favor, because you wouldn't want to be in a position where you're risking credibility.
Yeah.
Risking the integrity of your entire case, where there has been some credibility issues though, just based on one victim.
Yeah, exactly. I see your point. What about the coverage? You see the celebrity sites, Harvey Levin's TMZ and the Radar Online, etc. Are they being fair in this case, or is it just been celebritized, if that's a word?
I actually think that people have been rather circumspect. I mean, I get more information about these cases in the comments than I do from the articles themselves.
That's true.
And actually, most lawyers out there, if they're really evaluating the case, they're looking to see what the public is saying and what the public feels and thinks. And I have to say that it's a split out there. There are definitely, in the world of John Travolta, groups of people who are thinking that this guy is being picked on and isolated, you know, for the purposes of money. I think that is a very common technique in sexual assault cases. Blame the victim. Find some other reason. And I think that, you know, celebrities are used to paying their way for certain, you know, for certain things to go away. But I think that John Doe number two, who is saying, listen, I'm not going to mediation. I'm not going to let this be a settlement. I want a private trial with the judge and a jury if necessary, and settle this case on the merits. And I think that more people, if they stand up to these people and the truth comes out, hopefully justice prevails. I know I'm going to sound a little Pollyannish to believe that that's possible, but I think that, listen, I think that the evidence needs to lead to the conclusion, not the conclusion leading to the evidence.
Robin Sachs is here. Check out her webpage at robinsachs.com. Watch her on My Fox LA. She's a legal analyst.
Let me give you a plug of something that's coming up, actually, on My Fox LA. I'm doing on My Fox LA, we're having a little web show. I don't know if you know Larry Elder. He's the sage of South Central here in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Long, long time KABC radio show host. Famous libertarian, always talking smack about politics and people and law and so forth. He's an author. And he and I are doing a web show that will be airing starting, I believe, next week, if not in the next couple of weeks, where we debate hot topics, and it's a firecracker recession. So you'll be able to find that on My Fox LA coming up real soon.
Robin Sachs versus a libertarian. That would be interesting to see.
Right?
Because there's a little libertarian in Robin Sachs, or am I wrong?
There is a little libertarian. I'll tell you, the guy called me a liberal on the air the other day, and I was like, I had, you know, a liberal, and I almost fell out of my chair, and then I realized, you know, I will tell you all, and I say aloud and proud, I am a flip-flopper. I find myself on different issues on different sides of the voter lines, and it makes for great, fiery conversation, and no one knows when I'm going to agree or disagree with Larry.
Depends what the issue is right. So just before I had you or have you on, I was interviewing Denise Brown. And I've interviewed Denise Brown several times over the years. And we started talking about 18 years ago with OJ. And the topic came up, cameras in the courtroom. You know, that's something I like to ask about lots. I said, Denise, you lived it 18 years ago. What do you think about cameras in the courtroom today? And she surprised me a little bit by saying, fine, it's great. Have cameras in the courtroom. And her thought on that was because everyone loved OJ, because the cameras were in the courtroom, everybody got to see another side of OJ. All right. Drew Peterson's going to be coming around the corner here pretty quick. That's going to be the next big trial, in my opinion, that we're going to see. Let's talk about cameras in the courtroom. Nobody likes Drew right now. Nobody will ever like Drew right now. What will cameras in the courtroom do for that case?
I have a total biased opinion now. I'm no longer the lawyer that sits in a office building and can, you know, look down my nose in the media. I am the media now. So I love the cameras in the courtroom because if I can get into a courtroom, there's something for us to talk about and look at and put together so that the world can understand. I believe that, yes, cameras have an effect on what happens in the courtroom, and anybody who says otherwise is just being foolish. It's
right.
The fact of the matter is it affects the judge, it affects the lawyer, it affects the defendant, it affects the witnesses, and all kinds of things are under a microscope. But the fact of the matter is that I believe that for the educational value, for our checks and balances in this world that we claim that we want to be so transparent, the only way to be able to evaluate and look at it is in the courtroom. I mean, I look at Casey Anthony.
Yeah.
You can blame cameras in the courtroom. I'll tell you what I blame cameras. I don't blame cameras in the courtroom. I blame the prosecution for watching too much of their own cameras in the courtroom.
Yeah.
If they had, you know, maybe if they didn't watch so much Nancy Grace make her, you know, blowing smoke up their butts, feeling like their case was so great, they would have worked a little bit harder piecing their case together. So I think that, you know, it's an effective tool, and we live in a society that allows for media and access to information, and I think that, you know, it makes it harder, but I think, you know, we should be up for the challenge.
You know, and that's such a good point, and you mentioned Nancy Grace, and I've interviewed Jeff Ashton, and he will disagree with you, obviously, and talk more about the jury process itself, but you hit the nail on the head when you talk about watching your own press or reading your own press or reading your own media. How big of a problem is that from both sides?
I mean, you have to be careful from all over the world. I mean, listen, there's people who, there's information to be garnered from what you read and hear about yourself. You can get a sense of what may be working and what's not working. But you cannot, you know, rely on the media as being the temperature for what is going to happen in a courtroom. You can use it as a tool. And I think that you cannot, you know, I do believe, I think that the world felt that the case was so strong against Casey Anthony, but it was not as strong in the courtroom as it was out of the courtroom, because they had different evidence that was admissible to the general public versus what was admissible for the jury to consider. And I think that it's easy to fall in that trap, and I don't know that they would have, you know, correlated them to, you know, one together. I think that, you know, they could, you know, listen, when you're a prosecutor or any lawyer for that matter, if you win your case, you say, I won my case. If you lose your case, you say, look what the jury did. That's just the way it is. It's human nature. Yeah. So, you know, no one's going to want to take any responsibility. But the fact of the matter is I, you know, I know the cases that I lost and when I was in the DA's office are the cases that I assumed were stronger than they were. And I didn't pay attention to the weaknesses in the way that I should have. The cases that I won and won hard were usually the cases that I were most difficult, that were less obvious, because I really had to really think about the evidence and think about how I was presenting it. And this case, you know, wasn't easy. And I hope that the, you know, as the Trayvon Martin case unfolds, they too, you know, don't fall for that. That's what I worry about in terms of their own case. One is besides the fact that I hope that there's evidence there to support what they're doing. But besides that, I hope that they aren't relying on the, you know, Justice for Trayvon Martin movement to make it through that case.
There's got to be evidence, and how you articulate that evidence is so important. The witness that gets on the stand, the milkman or the gas attendant or the whoever that may have seen something or may have heard something, Robin, and how do you prepare that person to come into that big courtroom and to be cross-examined by a defense attorney, let's talk about Kronk, and to be all of a sudden accused of something to try and place the blame on them, that scares away people from coming to testify, or am I wrong?
Okay, I think that no one wants to have to deal with potentially being impeached. No one wants to certainly be cross-examined on a camera where they every little, you know, aspect of their life becomes fair game. But one of the things that I think that people need to realize is, one, is I think there's a much, you know, balance the personal feelings of not wanting to do something against the greater desire for justice and the greater desire for doing right. And I like to think that people still feel like doing the right thing is a good thing. And I think, you know, it's kind of how I look at voting. You can't really complain about the system unless you participate in the system.
Right.
And so, you know, I personally, if people sit here and you know, bitch and moan to me about our president or our taxes or whatever else that people bitch and moan, the first question I ask them is, did you vote? And if you vote, then you have free license to complain in my mind. But if you don't and you don't participate, then you don't get to do that. And I think that one of the things that people don't realize is that there is a cathartic effect for a witness to come into court, particularly a victim, I find, and sexual assault even more so, to come into court and say, you know what, I'm going to say what I'm going to say, and this prosecutor believes me. And this cop believes me. And they care enough about what I have to say to put me on the stand.
So true. Robin Sachs, robinsachs.com. Watch her on MyFox LA. She's the hardest working woman in the entertainment business and the news business. And we always love her here. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Listen to Robin Sachs. Go to the webpage, scaredmonkeysradio.com. Go back to whatever year I started interviewing Robin Sachs. It's been years now. Listen to her then and listen to her now. She is media now. And, hey, listen, big fan. She's dead on a lot of things. Victims' rights, advocacy, you name it. She's a big-time supporter of all of that. But Robin has found her niche in the media now. And that's a good thing. Anyway, we're going to end up the show a little bit early tonight. I want to thank Denise Brown and Robin Sachs for dropping around the program. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.